Hello and welcome to another episode of the NBCSports.com College Basketball Talk Podcast. My name is Rob Doster. I got a fun show on tap for you today. I had a chance to catch up with my guy Jay Billis of ESPN. We talked a little bit about Kentucky. We talked a little bit about Duke. We talked a little bit about North Carolina. We talked about Jay's fondness for ice cream while he's calling games. It's a fun story. You got to hear that. Then, as always, every Friday, I caught up with my man Reeks from Barstool Sports, the Fundamentally Sound Podcast. We talked a little bit about the weekend's games. We talked about the betting lines that we like. We went through it all, as always, and we're going to get into those conversations in just a minute. Before I do, I got to make the usual request. Please rate, please review, and please subscribe to this podcast, whether it's Apple Podcasts, whether it's Stitcher, whether it's Google Play, whether it's Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts for free, whatever app you use, when you rate, you review, or you subscribe, all those interactions help within the metrics and help within the search functions within those apps. It makes it so that it's easier to find this podcast. It makes it so this podcast is ranked higher in the various rankings within those apps. So if you enjoy what you're hearing here, please say something nice about me, throw me a little five-star rating. And if you could, ask producer Tess to cut me some slack. She yelled at me last week. She said that the 90-minute podcast was too long. I got a nice 75-minute podcast for you this week. So if you enjoy those 75-minute podcasts, if you have a long commute, if you have a long plane ride, if you have a long train ride, please let Tess know that you did so she will stop yelling at me. Now let's get into that interview with Jay Billis. And now let me welcome on ESPN's Jay Billis. Jay, you were down in Kentucky on Tuesday, and I do want to talk to you a little bit about that team. But before I do, I got to know, man, what's going on with the ice cream? What's that about?
It, wasn't that awesome? That came from, I did a game at Kentucky in December. Harvard was playing at Kentucky, and I played in college with Tommy Amaker, so it was a great opportunity for me to see him. But in doing the game, we were doing some promo, and they showed while they had the lower third graphic on there, that they showed behind one of the benches, and there were a couple fans that were eating ice cream. And I was like, you know, I'd said on the air, like, I don't care about the promo. Look at that ice cream. And I was serious. I mean, that was looked awesome. And I made a joke about, but they're not very aggressive in going after it. Like, that's a 3 or 4 lift cone, and that thing should be gone if you're aggressively eating your ice cream. I made a joke about it. And before the game was over, somebody had brought a cone over for me, and I ate it on the air, and it was fantastic. So now it seems like every time I go there, they bring me an ice cream cone, and they brought Dan Shulman one too. And I'm telling you, Rob, I wolfed that thing down in probably 30 seconds while we were on the air, and it was spectacular. That was, you know, Rupp Arena is now my all-time favorite place, and will, as long as I'm fed ice cream during the game, I would be glad to be a shadow of a shadow replacing Kaywood Ledford if I get to eat ice cream every game.
Is anyone else going to get to call a Kentucky game now, or is that you?
Yeah, there's going to be people scratching and clawing to do Kentucky games. Not that they weren't anyway, but they will definitely be doing that now because ice cream's part of the equation.
Now, talk to me a little bit about this Kentucky team. I feel like I don't know much about them. I can't figure out if they're actually good, just how good they are. Are we looking at a team that could come together and be, you know, an Elite Eight, Final Four team? Or are we looking at someone that gets out of the, that doesn't get out of the first week? And what's your take on Kentucky?
It might be all of those things. I'm not sure how to process this year, Rob. I thought coming into the year we would have some dominant teams. I thought Michigan State would be one. I thought Duke would be another. So we've got some very, very good teams. And we've got a lot of good teams. I don't think we have anybody that we would call great, at least not yet. Maybe somebody will emerge, but we don't have great yet. I know people throw the word great around, but I'm using it, you know, sort of the way I think it should be, and that's sparingly. So we don't have great teams. What that means is, like, we don't have a year like 2015 where, you know, Kentucky was undefeated and you knew that Wisconsin and Duke were going to be, that something, you know, something catastrophic had to happen if they weren't playing in the Elite Eight or beyond. We don't have that this year. So we could see, and because of that, to answer your question, we could see Kentucky in the Final Four, because I don't think it's going to take something extraordinary for a good team to make the Final Four. And it's not going to be shocking to see a good team get beat in the first or second round. I still think we're going to see big shots make it through. It's just a question of, you know, this year we could have two South Carolinas, or maybe three. Last year we weren't going to have that. This year it's possible, because we just don't have that kind of strength. We've got unbelievable talent, individual talent, but for some reason, I don't see the team strength and team consistency, that I expected to this point in the season. And you know, you watch it as much as I do, if not more. You know, we've never had a time where we got to the Christmas holiday and we didn't have an undefeated team. And nobody's, it doesn't seem like there are very many teams that are undefeated in their conference so far after like 3-4 games. And we've seen more top 10 teams beaten by unranked teams than ever before. So the volatility is greater than it's ever been. I don't think Kentucky is as good as they have been in past years. And I think we're going to see this kind of volatility with this team the whole year. I do think they're going to continue to get better, but other teams are going to get better too. And so I don't see the same kind of talent that we've seen at Kentucky in years past, the same kind of lottery talent. I think we're going to see a number of these guys come back next year and play at Kentucky. Yeah. And we haven't seen that in a while, but they're still good. They're just not as, they're not as good as we've seen.
Yeah, my big thing with this team is it feels like they have all the role guys they normally have, but they don't have that star. They don't have that go-to guy. You know, sometimes it's Malik Monk, or, you know, it's Carl Towns, or it's Devin Booker, or it's whoever. They always have a guy that you, it's Jamal Murray, someone that you know can go get you a bucket when you need a bucket, a guy that they can kind of, you know, be the face of that program. It doesn't feel like they have that player this year. And, you know, maybe it could end up being Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. I think he's been pretty... pretty impressive, better than I thought in the last couple of weeks. But I don't know. Kevin Knox just looks like he's not really suited to the way that they use him. You know what I would love to see? I would love to see them use a lineup with Kwade, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Hami Diallo, Kevin Knox at the four, and then whoever, PJ Washington, Nick Richards, someone at the five. But I don't think that Coach Cal would use that lineup.
He probably wouldn't, but he could at times. You know, Kwade Green's hurt right now, as you know, but – you know, I think the takeaway I have from what you just said, and I agree with what you're saying, is that, you know, the names you mentioned, the past names, are all lottery picks.
Exactly.
And the guys that you can rattle off on this team, frankly, are not. And even Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, I think he's their best player. John Calipari has just said that recently. He's their best player. But I think he's their best player because of his two-way ability. I think the best offensive player is Kevin Knox. But I don't see either one of us being lottery picks. And that's kind of the difference. And I think when people hear a guy like me or me say that, it sounds disrespectful, but it's not. It's just fact. I mean, it's hopefully it's respectful of the other guys, like of the guys that have gone before. Like Kevin Knox isn't as good as Karl Anthony Towns. It's respectful to Karl Anthony Towns. You're talking about a super talent there. And pretending someone who is not of that level is of that level is not the way this job is done. And trying to suggest that this Kentucky team is as good as last year's team or the team in 2015 or the team in 2012 or 2010, it's not. But they're still good and they're still fun to watch, and it'll still be they still have a chance for a really good outcome. But they're not gonna cut through this league. It's going to be a lot harder for them to win road games, and the SEC champion could have 5 or 6 losses, and that's not a bad thing this year. It'll be fun in a different way. Look, we feel like we know who's going to win in football, and it's the same teams every year. Basically, in basketball, it's the same. It's the same teams every year. This year, it feels a little bit different. We'll see how it comes out, but I think it'll be fun. It's fun every kind of way.
Now, what's your takeaway on Texas A&M? They're sitting right now, they're 0-4 in the SEC. You know, they can't get people healthy. They have everyone getting suspended all the time. But they're also one ridiculous shot from Tremont Waters and one borderline no-call foul on Wenyen Gabriel away from being 2-2 in the conference with dealing with all these injuries and players missing time. Should they be worried at this point, or did they just get a couple bad breaks and things are gonna start figuring it out?
Yeah, they got some bad breaks, and some of it was self-inflicted with DJ Hogue and Robert Williams and all that. But they've had illness and injury too. that's combined with those, you know, sort of the self-inflicted things. They are way better than their record. But the area of concern is this leaves them with less margin for error. So at the end of the year, and this is where this is incumbent on the committee to make the right decision here. At the end of the year, when supposing they get healthy, and they're the team that we think they should be, at the end of the year, if they turn out to be that, the committee better take into account sort of the reasons behind the 0-4 start and not slot them so that they're kind of jobbing the team that gets them. You know, slotting them as a lesser team when they're not that when we get to the end of the year. And that's going to be a difficult balance act, because I'm a Bill Parcells, you are what your record says you are guy. And it doesn't say in any of the record books that, you know, it gives the result. It doesn't say so-and-so was hurt or so-and-so didn't feel well. But we go by best team, in the tournament, and we take things into account. And the committee has proven that they can screw this up, and I hope they don't screw it up with regard to Texas A&M, because they're way better than their record indicates.
Yeah, and the other thing they have going for them is that the SEC is really, really good this year. So where in a normal season you might have some, you know, sub 100, 150, maybe sub 200 teams that can kind of bring your resume down a little bit, and you maybe don't have as many top-level wins. You have a lot of teams in that conference where if you do end up getting that win, it's going to look like a quality win at the end of the season. I don't think it's crazy to think that the SEC could get six or seven teams in. I mean, LSU last night, they went into Arkansas and they beat them by 21 points.
It is a good league, but there are other leagues that are comparable, whether it's the Big East or the Big 12 or the ACC. They're all comparable this year. The only one that I think is down is the Pac-12 of the big shot conferences. But the problem you can have is, you know, we're going to wind up, somebody has to lose. You know, the league at the end of the year in league play, everybody's it's 50% wins, 50% losses of every game that's played. So people are going to lose, and that's going to be a separating factor. And everybody in those leagues, for the most part, they're playing comparable schedules. So a lot of these teams are going to get weeded out. And so I don't have a problem with any of that stuff. It's just how is the committee going to determine quality losses, because I think they have to do that as well. Like, do you punish Texas A&M for, like, I think that was kind of a dumb loss that they wound up with at LSU. Three crazy things had to happen in a row, and they did. And there was some dumb in their loss at Kentucky too. They had multiple chances to win that game and probably should have won if you look at the balance of things. If you look from Kentucky's perspective, maybe you can make an argument that they absolutely should have won, and they did. So they get credit for that. But, there's going to be a lot of teams. There are a lot of leagues that are saying, hey, we can get eight teams in this year, nine teams. But at the end of the line, we're going to probably wind up in the same spot that we always are with, you know, seven, eight, you know, and then maybe the ACC is the one that gets more than anybody.
Now, speaking of the ACC, you have North Carolina. If I read the schedule right, you're calling their game on Saturday, correct?
Right.
Now, have you had a chance to watch some film and break them down yet? Because the thing that's interesting to me about this North Carolina team, and I got a thought here, and tell me if you agree with this. It feels like this North Carolina team plays the way that we expect Duke teams to play, while Duke is kind of playing the way that we expect North Carolina teams to play. Meaning that Duke has these two big bodies on their front line. They pound the offensive glass. They get out and they kind of run in transition. And you know, they're beating you 100-90 instead of, 70-60 or whatever. Whereas North Carolina kind of, you know, they're playing a little bit four around one now, maybe even five out with Luke May, the way that he can shoot. And it kind of seems like Roy Williams is playing the way that we normally expect a Coach K team to play, at least recently. And Coach K is kind of playing the way that Roy Williams made famous with the two bigs, pound the offensive glass, control the boards kind of style. Am I reading too much in there, or am I onto something?
No, I think that's right with regard to how Duke is playing. Duke still, they don't run, you know, the kind of offense that North Carolina does with the secondary break and, you know, the sideline break after a free throw and then the box sets that they use and all that stuff. Carolina's still Carolina with the way they played, and Carolina's changed. You know, I saw the change against Boston College where they went small. But other than that, they've been traditional. They just haven't been traditionally as good because their big guys are all freshmen. And so they haven't had the kind of consistency. They lost all their older big guys, and then they're playing all these freshman big guys, and they haven't been as good offensively because of that, or as good defensively. But they were still Carolina. And even, you know, Carolina was running some flex on offense, which kind of, you know, told me that they weren't as confident in some of the things they were able to do with their freshmen. They need to come along quicker. Duke's problem isn't offense, as you know.
They can't stop anybody.
They can't stop anybody. And I don't know that it necessarily changed because they played Pittsburgh. Because Pittsburgh's so young, they lost Ryan Luther, who's out for the year, was giving them a double-double and gave them an older player. So Pittsburgh is defenseless. And so the fact that Duke could stop them, I don't think is automatically so encouraging. But Duke's so young, I don't know that they've ever been that young across the board. And then they're young and big. So it's kind of a really interesting mix of things. But they're, you know, you can't give up. I mean, it's January and they're giving up 93 points a game going into that Pittsburgh game. And you know, I was at the NC State game that they lost at NC State, and NC State was coming off two games against Clemson and Notre Dame. You know, I watched the film of those games. They couldn't score in either one of those games, and they put up 96 points against Duke. And look, I think Duke is going to get a lot better. But they're, you know, you're kind of running out of time. And so they got to keep plugging because they're the most talented team in the country. They lack some depth, but their first seven, they are the most talented team. And I don't think it's a close call on that front. They're just extraordinarily young, talented, rather than having a mix of young and old.
Now, speaking about their defense, I do want to ask you a little bit about Marvin Bagley. A couple of conversations I've had with him in terms of what his long-term ability is as a prospect. The question is always him on the defensive end of the floor, and there are some concerns about, you know, how well he guards pick and rolls, whether or not he can defend the rim. But he moves the way on the perimeter you kind of want a guy that's one of these switchable bigs to be able to move. And I think he's more athletic than he's kind of shown when it comes to being able to protect through it. Like, if you can rebound the way that he rebounds, it would make sense that you can block shots better than he's been blocking shots this season. So I'm curious, the issues that he's having on that end, is it more about how good he is as a defender? Or is he kind of being told by Coach K, look, we need you on the floor. Don't worry about getting a stop. We don't want you in foul trouble. You know, if you're going to give up a layup, give up the layup. Don't worry about that. We need you on the floor.
No, I mean, I can't. Maybe he's telling that. I can't imagine he would be. You know, in the time I've been around that program, that's not something I think you would ever hear Coach K utter. I think Marvin Bagley needs to learn more about defense and sort of be more alert to what's going on the defensive end. Because offensively, he's the most instinctive offensive player I've ever seen. His second jump is ridiculous. His fluidity, you know, like he may spin and you know, away from traffic instinctively and be able to complete a play. And you know, that's not something that you can practice. He's just got that. You know, he's gonna become a better shooter, and he'll be a better free throw shooter and all that stuff. I have zero doubt about that. And I think he'll be a much better defender. And he made some defensive mistakes in the game, and he wasn't alone. There were a whole bunch of mistakes made in that game. But he made a couple defensive mistakes that were just sort of not yet understanding it. But, Rob, like, if you took any of us old guys, you know, a guy like me that played in the 80s, I mean, if you took out our game tapes from the 80s when we were freshmen, we made mistakes every bit this bad. Every bit this bad. But we didn't have to guard pick and rolls like he's got to. People didn't run pick and rolls back then. So we had the benefit of being able to get older while we were playing. He's not going to have that benefit. And even if he only gets a little bit better on defense, that guy's going to play in the NBA for as long as he's healthy. And people are going to love having him on the floor because of all the things he can do. His draft status is not going to dip below the first or second pick no matter what. Because he's that talented, and I know he'll pick up the defensive concepts to where he'll be just fine out of pick and rolls, and he'll, you know, he can block shots, he can do rebound, he can do all that stuff. He's the real deal.
Yeah, and the other part about big guys defensively is in high school, they're normally just told, you know, stand in front of the rim and put your arms straight up in the air. So when it comes down to having to learn the instinctual differences of, you know, whether you want to blitz a pick and roll or if you're going to, you know, kind of play off it a little bit, whatever, that stuff comes as you learn, I think, as that's the point that you were trying to make. And
well, it does. It does. But the thing in high school, Rob, is that big guys in high school are basically not allowed to play because the referees call fouls on them just for being bigger and stronger. And so you know, they may understand the concepts of pick and roll defense, but they're really not allowed to do it. And so what winds up happening that I see is that big guys, it takes them a while to become to get used to the physical challenge of playing in college because they're not allowed to be physical in high school. And so they're basically not allowed to block out. They're not allowed to make contact on free throw blockouts. They're not allowed to touch anybody. And so they have to get used to that kind of thing. And I'm not saying that's all of it with Marvin Bagley. It's not. You know, he's got to figure out help side defense and talking and playing the ball instead of your man. He's very man oriented, but a lot of freshmen are. He's just the guy we see all the time. And because Duke is on TV more than Breaking Bad reruns. And so we see that all the time. But he can pick up the concepts. It's just that you know, for a lot of freshmen, it's slow. But we see it more with him than we do. Like, the guys at Pittsburgh make a bunch of mistakes too, but we don't see it as often because we're not watching them.
Yeah, and we also don't care about the players at Pitt making mistakes because we just assume that they're going to make mistakes because they're Pitt. We're talking about Duke and Marvin Bagley and a potential number one pick. So every single thing that he does is going to get picked apart. Last thing I got for you, Jay. If I was going to force you to bet your life savings on one team to win the ACC this year, is it Virginia?
Yeah. Oh, I think Virginia will win it because they're the most balanced team. They're the toughest team. They're older. They all kind of accept the system that they have. And none of them are trying to get beyond where they are right now, if that makes any sense. Not that any players are... I'm not saying they're selfish or all that stuff, but there's a lot swirling around a lot of these other players. It doesn't seem to be swirling around the Virginia guys, and the way they defend is really hard to deal with. I mean, they take people out of what they do. They change the rhythm of games, and especially against younger teams. Like, you know, people got all you know, their undies in a bunch over North Carolina going down there and losing. In Charlottesville, but heck, Carolina's lost there like the last 3 years. And last year, North Carolina was, in my view, from the beginning of the year, the best team in the country, and they scored 43 points there. They actually scored more this year than they did last year, and they're not as good of a team. And Virginia's way better than they were last year. So, you know, I think Virginia, they're already undefeated in the league after four games, and so they're ahead of everybody else. And I think they're going to stay there as long as they stay healthy.
Did you see this coming with them? Because I did. I thought they were still a year away from getting back to this level. I did not see this kind of season happening this year.
I didn't, but it's not because of Virginia. It's because of everybody else. The teams that I thought were going to be the best teams aren't as good as I thought they'd be. Duke's not as good as I thought they'd be, even though they're offensively, but they are not defensively. North Carolina's not quite as good as I thought. I thought Notre Dame would be better, even though they're injured. And the middle of the league is not as good as I thought it would be. It's still good, kind of like I said before, like there are a number of teams that are good. And then Louisville, with all the issues they've had, they're not as good as I thought they'd be. So, you know, kind of the league overall has fallen a little bit short of what I thought. I thought it would be super strong instead of just as the ACC is as strong as any other league, maybe stronger because of how many teams it has. But it's not as strong as I expected it to be. So Virginia is every bit as good as I thought they'd be, which means they're better than a number of other teams because they're not, you know, those teams aren't as good as I thought they'd be.
Jay, I appreciate the time, man, and I hope that you get an ice cream cone at every game that you go to the rest of the year.
I think that's the way the world's supposed to be, Rob.
And now, as we do every Friday, let me welcome on Reegs from Barstool Sports and from the Fundamentally Sound podcast to help talk us through the games that are coming up this weekend and some of the betting lines that we do like. As always, a disclaimer, the lines that we're using are from KenPom.com. They usually end up being pretty accurate and pretty on point for what Vegas ends up having, but we are recording this on a Thursday night. There are no official Vegas lines for Saturday games at this point, so this is the best that we can work with. Reegs, What's going on, my man? How you doing?
Not much. I'm doing well, man. How about you?
I am doing well. One other quick note. People that have been reading my stuff for a while will know this, but I used to do Facebook Lives at the end of every night called The Nightcap, where I would talk about craft beer and basketball. I don't do that anymore, but I do still drink a lot of craft beer. So what I'm going to start doing is talking about the beer that I'm drinking on this podcast on Thursday nights, because we always record pretty late. So what I have right now, Riggs, tell me if you've ever had this before. It's the Nirvana IPA from the Omegang Brewery up in Cooperstown, New York.
No, I have not.
I've been a big fan of Omegang since the first time. They have this quad called Three Philosophers. It's really, really good and really strong and brewed with cherries, and it only comes in the 750, and you drink one of those things and you'll be feeling pretty good. I've never seen this IPA that they had before, so I saw it at the store today. I decided to check it out, and you know what? It's not too bad, man. I'm a big IPA guy. What about you?
I will drink anything not named Miller Lite. Like, I'm very easygoing when it comes to beer. I told you, for the last year, I've been on a sour beer kit. Like, I know.
I don't understand that, man. I don't get the sour beers. I don't get it. I don't like them. I don't know why. What is it about them that I guess that you like?
It's just a little bit of everything. Like, to me, it's a perfect summer beer too. And now it's just extended, because at least here in Cincinnati, like I said, there's like 27 breweries or something like that out here, and they'll make like sour IPA, so you can get it for like kind of the winter months and fall months. But I just kind of found like three or four that I really liked, and it's just kind of been like, I'm a guy that's very addictive, so if I find something I like, and I'm very stubborn, so I'm just gonna drink it because I know I like it. So I freak out when I go to like a store, because I'm like, I want to try something different. I'm scared, so I'm gonna get what I had before.
See, I'm the exact opposite. When I go there, I'm way too picky. Like, I'll look through it. I literally, dude, I could spend like an hour in a beer store just going through and like picking out and being like, you know what? I had this one 2 weeks ago and it didn't have a good enough finish. And like this one, I liked it because it was hoppy, but it was a little bit too malty. I like it a little bit fresher. It sounds like your dog's had a couple of sour beers back there.
Yeah, we have two of them. This is the little one that refuses to walk down the steps, which of course is louder than the 100-pound dog.
We are now in the market for a pup. Where my wife works, we were waiting on one thing to happen at her job, and it happened, which means that it's a little bit more steady for her now. And so now she's going to actually let me get a dog. We had to get the house. We had to get the yard. Then she had to make sure that she was actually going to be employed for more than 6 months at the place that she's working. And so now she gave me the okay to get a dog. We are we're going on Sunday. We have
big or small.
We're looking at a boxer, which is it's not a rescue yet, but it is a friend of a friend's, and the family, I think they're getting a divorce or something like that, but the dog is going to end up going to the pound is it the pound, the shelter? What is it called now? The shelter?
Yeah, the shelter.
They're going to take it to the shelter if we don't go and adopt it. The concern we have, so we're basically like doing a test drive on it on Sunday,
right?
And so we're bringing her to the house, and we're going to let her have an overnight, because one, we have a 2-year-old, and she's okay with kids. I guess the woman that currently has the dog has a 2-year-old, a 4-year-old, a 6-year-old, and an 8-year-old. So
you're cut for the next 6 years.
So yeah, apparently, like, so I guess it's good with kids. The problem is we have a cat. And we're not sure, like, boxers and cats aren't generally they don't always get along too well. So I don't know. Yes. Kind of worried about it, man.
And we have my dog, which is the 3-year-old 100-pound chocolate lab. And then we have the dog that came with my wife, which is the 15-year-old miniature dachshund, who is, I mean, they're both super nice dogs, but it's the dachshund is the one that like goes after the cats, because he's dachshunds are hunting dogs. So we have this little misfit old dog that tries to like chase cats and things like that. And of course,
and he just wants to be on the College Basketball Talk podcast. Why he's standing at the top of the stairs barking, trying to get you to help him bring him down. Just get your dog down the stairs.
I brought him down to my basement with me, sitting on the couch now.
And he's happy?
He's happy.
Yeah, there you go, man. Should we talk about basketball?
Let's talk about hoops.
Let's talk about hoops. First things first. Like, can I go on a little rant for a second? Are you cool with that?
Always. I love rants.
Can we stop with the Friday night games that are relevant, please?
Can we get them tonight? Like, tonight's slate sucked. Couldn't we get
Tonight's not good.
Couldn't we get
There's not a lot of good games. I think it's like, I think it's Butler against Marquette.
Like, put that tonight.
Providence and DePaul. And there's another game. I want to, like, Dayton, I want to say something VCU, random.
Which is, like, most then, years that's a key game.
Yeah, and normally it's better than it would be this year. But come on, like, the way that I build my life around college basketball is so I know that on Friday nights I'm not going to have anything to do for work. So, like, I get a night to hang out with my wife, and I get a night to do something with my son, and I get a night where I can, like, unplug and kind of put my computer off to the side and, like, not stare at nine different screens for 7 hours at night. And now they're putting basketball games on a Friday night. Like, come on, man.
And you have to watch Marquette Butler.
And you got to watch Marquette Butler. And, like, you guys are killing me here. I'm all about myself. People listening to this podcast know that. See, I'm very into what's best for Rob is what's best for the world. And what's best for me is no basketball games on Friday night. So can we stop with this?
See, that's why I'm also what's best for Bobby is best for the world. And since my wife works every other weekend, those work weekends that she works, like Friday nights, I'm all on, like, give me a game because I'm sitting at home and I need something to do.
Put them on Saturdays, man. So we got the whole day, you know, like you're mentally ready for it. On Friday nights, I'm not mentally prepared to pay attention to sports.
It is weird to see, like, a quality college basketball game on a Friday night.
No, I don't want it to happen. We need to stop with this madness. Get me on the phone with ESPN. Get me on the phone with FS1. Get me on the phone with CBS. Get me on the phone with whoever you got to get me on the phone with so we can stop with this craziness. It's unnecessary.
When I become
us college basketball writers need our Friday nights, guys.
When I become commissioner of college basketball, I'll take it into consideration.
Yes, because you got to make me a deputy or something. Yeah, for sure. You got to make this happen.
I already said, like, I'm going to storm it, and I'm like listing who I want in charge of certain. Like, I'm going to give everyone like a cabinet position that I want.
Yeah, good, man. You got to let me get up in there. I will help you make some good decisions. Before we actually talk about the games that are coming up this weekend. In the interview with Billis, we didn't have a chance to go over some of the absolute insanity that is happening in the Pac-12, and I absolutely love it. I cannot get more of it. So for people that aren't quite aware, where do we even start with this? It probably starts with, like, the FBI investigation, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's, like, really what started this crazy year in the Pac-12.
So USC and Arizona are two of the schools that are locked into that FBI investigation, right? One of them, there are allegations in there. I don't even know if allegations is the right word, if it's in an actual FBI complaint, but there are accusations that this financial planner and the runner for an agent had funneled money to assistant coaches in order to get some of the players on Arizona and some of the players on USC to sign with them later. Arizona's lost a commit because of this, and they've had an assistant coach fired as a result. USC lost an assistant coach. They have a player, DeAnthony Melton, who is now not allowed to play for the rest of the season. He's been found ineligible by USC. And I'm pretty sure they lost, like, all the 2018 commits that they had. It was at least two of them. I can't remember if it was all three.
I know two. I think it was just two. I think it was Cherry and Brooks.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I'm going to trust you because you said it with a lot of confidence.
Well, I only remember that because when I wrote, like, a sentence about it during the Tayshaun Cherry decommitment.
Yeah, that's right. So from there, then you had the entire LeVar Ball madness, right? And everything that happened when UCLA going to China and then Donald Trump and LeVar Ball getting into arguments on CNN and on Twitter. And so you had that entire ordeal, right?
And that was November.
That was in November. And then – so I think what happened next is that Tad Boyle – the Colorado head coach has been really outspoken about this stuff. He spoke with Jeff Eisenberg of Yahoo, who's been on this podcast before. We got to call that a friend of the podcast, right?
Oh, yeah. Friend of the program.
Friend of the podcast, Jeff Eisenberg of Yahoo Sports. He spoke with Tad Boyle before the season started. And Tad had some fairly harsh things to say, I think is probably fair. I don't remember the exact quotes, but I remember that he didn't really hold back and didn't really bite his tongue. And then this weekend, or maybe it was last week. No, it was over the weekend. It was on Saturday. Arizona beat Colorado in Colorado. And
Colorado beat Arizona.
Yeah, Colorado beat Arizona in Colorado. Yeah. And Tad Boyle, after the game, was asked if it was a little bit more satisfying because they had beaten Arizona. And he said, like, hell yes, absolutely. The most talented teams in our conference are Arizona and USC, specifically, but not implicitly, referencing the FBI investigation, right? It was very clear what he was trying to say and what he meant. And he's, I think he said, like, hell yes, four times in his answer, like, emphatically. So Andy Enfield had a statement during the week where he kind of responded and basically said, like that's wrong. Like, Tad shouldn't be, like, talking about us. We didn't do anything wrong. We resent the implication. And then Tad responded, and he was just kind of like, hey, I said complimentary things about them, and I didn't want this to escalate, blah, 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 blah. You know what you said, Tad. It was awesome.
Right.
We loved it, but you know what you said. So then at the USC-Colorado game, USC won, and Andy Enfield, like, this is great. I love moments like this. Calls a timeout with 20 seconds left. Just to let him stew a little bit. Just to let him know, like, hey, you know what? We beat you. Remember those things you said about us? Yeah, it didn't really work out. And then afterwards, I don't know if you watched the video of the handshake line, but Andy Enfield, as he was walking there, was clapping and screaming. And then the handshake was the quickest handshake I think I've ever seen between coaches. It was an absolute blow-by. It was great. I loved it.
It's so perfect. Like, it's, and the thing is, like, I have zero problem with either of these coaches doing what they did.
I love it,
like,
man.
And I'm cool with, like, Tad Boyle speaking his mind about this, about the situation, because it's one that's hovering over the entire sport. And I'm cool with Andy Enfield, like, defending himself and USC, because that's what he's in charge of. So I have zero problem with it. Like, I've stressed this on all forms of media. I don't care about sportsmanship, right? Like, to me, it's a fake thing that, like, fans like to yell about is, well, that's unsportsmanlike. And really, who cares? Because there's a game to be played. It's competitive. Like, if you win, brag about it. I don't care. Like, it's part of being competitive.
Yeah, if you don't want someone to stun on you like that, don't let him beat you.
Right, right. And Boyle knew what he was doing. He knew he had USC next. So it's like, you can't play the dumb card with that and try to back off. Like, I wish he doubled down.
Yeah, it was like, no, did. I was. So the best part was after the game. After the game, Enfield was asked about it. And Enfield was like, I just had to talk to my team about a couple different things. And I forget what Tad Boyle's exact quote was, but he was like, I'm not going to forget this, and my team is not going to forget this, which just makes me so fired up for the next time they're going to play in Colorado, because it's impossible. Like, you don't sweep that weekend, right? It's really hard to win in Colorado and Utah. We went over that last week on the pod with Mark Titus, and and I can't wait for that game. It's going to be great.
Who had the better petty late timeout? Steve Alford and Sean Miller last year, or Andy Enfield with Tad Boyle this year?
I think it was Steve Alford and Sean Miller.
Because that was like 0.7 seconds left. When I forget who called. It was Alford the one that called timeout like a second left?
Yeah, Alford did it first. And I think they were up by five with like 2.7 seconds left. They were at McHale, yeah. And then when the game was at UCLA – or maybe no, it was a conference tournament.
It was in the tournament, yeah.
Conference tournament. I think Sean Miller called a timeout with like 2 seconds left. And I talked to my team about some stuff.
Yeah, that was perfect. I love that stuff. Like, I'm all here for any sort of petty, like, garbage talk. Like, I love it. I love it. I anyone who played competitive did something like this at some point, as long as you played above, I'd say, like, the junior high level competitively. Like, you either talk junk on the court, on the field, whatever sport you played, or you said something. Like, if you're a coach, you probably said something at some point. And I am so here for it. I wish all coaches did something like this.
It makes it so much more entertaining.
It's fun. Like, it makes college basketball fun. Like, isn't what makes NBA fun, like, the petty wars, right? Like, that's what you see all the time, is who's liking what on Instagram and who's saying what. And it's part of what makes the storyline so great. Like, I wish college basketball had more of that.
So that wasn't even the best part of the Pac-12 this week. Wasn't even the best part of the Arizona schools visiting the mountain schools. After Arizona State won at Utah, somebody in the Utah athletic department, who turned out to be the athletic director, Chris Hill, was not happy about the way that the game was officiated. And during Larry Krzyzewski's press conference, this happened.
Okay. I don't recognize that voice.
The best part, man, like, you guys got to go find the video. It's on NBCSports.com. We wrote a story about this. But the best part is Krzyzewski's facial reactions when all that stuff is going on. He's just like, what is happening right now? He's just
staring dead ahead.
It is absolutely hilarious. It's one of the funniest videos that I think that I have I've ever seen of a press conference.
It's from Krzyzewski's like facial reactions to the pitch of the voice of the AD screaming in the background.
Yeah, his voice is just cracking. Like, I don't like, he's a grown man. He's been there for 30 right. years, and his voice is cracking like that because he's right. so upset about the officiating. Oh man, it was so great.
And I laugh even more just because Bobby's my name. So when I hear someone yelling like that and like yelling, essentially I just take it yelling at me. I lost it laughing when I heard it first.
Yeah, it was that was really quite entertaining. And I had to share that with you guys. You guys had to hear it. And make sure you go find the video of it. It's posted. So it's up there. It's on the website. It's on College Basketball Talk. You have to see the video because you'll die laughing looking at it. But all right, let's talk about the games, Reegs. What's the best game for you this weekend? I'm thinking it's probably West Virginia at Texas Tech, right?
Yeah. Can we take a quick sidebar and slap ourselves on the back for going 7-1 last week on this thing?
Yeah, we crushed it.
Yeah, we won people some money. So
if they hadn't started already the hashtag Fade Doster, then they might have some money.
Best game, I think it's got to be West Virginia at Texas Tech because I think you're looking at two true title contenders and two top 10 teams. If not that, I think it's probably Creighton Xavier.
Well, let's start with West Virginia at Texas Tech. So that game is probably not going to be pretty because I think
you might have
the two toughest teams in college basketball in that game. And they're going to.
Yeah.
So the way that Texas Tech defends, it's not. Like, West Virginia is full court. They're getting up in your ass for 94 feet, right? Like, they make life miserable for you. We saw that with Trae Young. Their whole game plan is built around this idea that we're going to try to foul you on every single possession because we're betting that referees are not going to call fouls on every single possession. And they win that bet right. a lot of times. Texas Tech is a little bit different, but they still kind of – they force turnovers. They get out and they pressure you in the half court. They try to make life difficult for you. They're just not pressing in the full court, but – it's still a very difficult brand of basketball to play against. So I don't think either of these teams are going to have a lot of fun being able to run offense. But I kind of love watching two teams that are really aggressive defensively play against each other. It's going to be ugly, but it's going to be like really, really entertaining, at least I think. What's your take on that game?
Yeah, I agree. I think what makes Texas Tech – I put this out on Twitter. I said Texas Tech – has the better defense in West Virginia, even though West Virginia is known for it just because they force, you know, live ball turnovers. But Texas Tech can play multiple defenses, right? Like, they can get up and press and play like in your shorts that way, or they can sit back in the pack line and make you try to shoot over them. So I think that's what makes them special. Like, Texas Tech is super athletic, which I don't think people realize because you hear Texas Tech and you just assume it's boring because it's in Lubbock, Texas. And they've been, call it what it is, they've been pretty irrelevant for quite some time. But I really like this Tech. I like both teams, but I really like this Texas Tech team, who I still think somehow flying under the radar from a national level. But yeah, they're gonna make it annoying, man. Like I don't know how well West Virginia's gonna be able to, especially Javon Carter, is gonna be able to take somebody off the dribble, get into the lane and draw attention and then kick out for an open look. Like, that's kind of what Carter likes to do. And West Virginia running that five out motion, that Tech can really take that away.
Yeah. I don't know how well West Virginia is going to play on the road in a situation like this. Cause my take is always that when you press like that, you thrive off of the energy you get from the crowd.
Right.
And obviously they're going to be playing on the road. They're not going to be getting the energy from that that Morgantown crowd, which unfortunately I was not able to actually go and see. I don't know if I've shared this story on the podcast yet. I don't know if I've told you this story yet either. I left 8 o'clock in the morning. I had this great plan for what I was going to do on Saturday, right? I was going to leave at 8 a.m. It was going to take 4.5 hours to drive to Morgantown from my house. I was going to get there. I was going to post up at a restaurant slash bar that, you know, let me watch 4 or 5 games at once throughout the day. I was going to have my laptop there. I was going to get my work done. It was going to be great. And then I was going to go to the game and I was going to watch Trae Young against Javon Carter. And I had this great day planned out in my head. And 20 minutes into the drive, my freaking car died on the side of the road.
Oh, no, you did not tell me that. And that's brutal. But I tell you what, man, there's something bad about Morgantown, West Virginia and cars. Like, I used to stop there when I would drive home from college because I had a good buddy that went there and it was on the way. I got towed home to my hometown of York, Pennsylvania, 3.5 hours, twice, 2 times in a row. I stopped there like 4 times.
Yeah, I was just happy that, look, if it happens 20 minutes into the drive, I was 15 miles from my house. It was still a free tow as a member of AAA. But if it happened, imagine if that happened on the drive home. That game ended at 9 o'clock Eastern time. By the time I would have been done writing, been done with media stuff, it would have been 11 o'clock. Imagine if that thing died at midnight in the mountains of West Virginia, in the middle of nowhere, when it was literally 1 degree out that night.
Yeah. Yeah, that would have been fun.
I might still be frozen on the side of the road.
Yeah, it would have been. It would have been. You would have been. So you've been walking to find some cell service for there for a while.
Would have been miserable. All right. So West Virginia at Texas Tech, that line is Texas Tech minus six. Who do you like?
I'm taking West Virginia just because I think it's going to be a one possession game. I agree that I think Tech wins outright just because I, especially in college with similar teams, I just default to the home team. But 6 points, it feels like a lot. I think the line will be a little bit lower when it comes out. But at six, I like West Virginia.
Yeah, if you can get West Virginia plus six, I think you got to go with them. I would guess the line is probably going to be closer to like, I was going to say 2 to 3, somewhere around there. And I think at that point, I would probably, if it's 2 points, I would probably take Texas Tech. If it's 4 points, I think you really have to start looking at Virginia. If it's 6 points, I think you got to get in on West Virginia if you're getting plus six. Because like you said, I think that's going to end up being a very close game.
Yeah.
All right.
And I love the under.
You love the under?
Yeah. If it's at what KenPom has it at, what, 144?
154.
154?
No, 140. Yeah. 144. 144.
Yeah, 144. I just feel like they're both just going to – the defense are just going to take the air out of the ball.
Yeah, but they both force a lot of turnovers. So I could see something where you're getting a lot of – you know, the live ball picks six turnovers. That's why I think that it would be, well, I would probably end up taking the over there. I don't know, though. I don't like.
I know you don't like betting unders.
Yeah, I don't like betting unders because I just don't think it's fun. But I also just.
I don't,
with games like that where you can get a lot of live ball turnovers, I don't like betting the over under in that just because I think it's so unpredictable in terms of like what you can end up seeing. Let's move on, though. TCU at Oklahoma, another battle in the Big 12, I guess. It looks like Oklahoma is -6, according to KenPom. What do you like there?
I like Oklahoma. I think TCU is a good team. I don't think they're going to collapse like they did last year where, again, kind of got off to a hot start and then fell apart during Big 12 play. But Oklahoma, like, who's stopping Trae Young on this TCU team, right?
Yeah, TCU is not very good defensively. The thing about Texas Tech and the thing about West Virginia, you know, I've seen a lot of stuff on Twitter and a lot of people talking about how, like, all of a sudden Trae Young faces, like, really tough and really aggressive defense and his efficiency went out the window. And it's like, yeah, of course. He's going up against Javon Carter. He's going up against Keenan Evans. He's going up against two of the maybe the 10 best defenses in all of college basketball. Of course his efficiency is going to go down. TCU is not on that level. They're a good team. I just don't see them. He put up 39-14 on the road against them.
It's kind of weird they're playing again so close together.
Yeah, it's one of those kind of, I guess, luck of the schedule type deals. Yeah. But, you know, I think I'd rather get the game against Oklahoma out of the way. early in the game against Trae Young.
If you're TCU, yeah, oh, for sure.
Get it out
for
of the
sure.
way early so you can play everybody else down the stretch of the season.
It almost feels good for TCU to get him too after West Virginia and Texas Tech, just hoping that his legs are tired.
Yeah, they might be. They might be. I still, if you can get Oklahoma minus six, I like that. I can see them. I can see them. I think I also like the over in that game.
Yeah, this feels like a game where Oklahoma comes out and hits 25 threes.
Yeah. They're back at home. They're playing against a defense that's not going to be all up in them the way that the last two defenses have been. I think you're right on that one.
Yeah.
Let's move on. Let's talk about Creighton at Xavier. I actually saw Xavier play the other night, and I saw them get worked by Villanova. Like, they always get worked by Villanova when they play in Philly. I guess before we get into it, what's your take on Trevon Blewett and his slump and what's going on with that team right now?
I'm not worried about his slump just because that's kind of who Trevon Blewett is. Like, he has these stretches throughout the season, and he's done it for all 4 years, where he just looks like an average player, which he can't be for the Xavier team. I don't think, I mean, Mac came out and said he's not hurt. I know there's a lot of speculation about his shoulder. If Mac says he's fine, I'm going to trust the head coach until I get told otherwise. But I'm not, like, I had him as a first team All-American in the first half of the year. Cause he is that good. I know the last couple games have been weird, but again, like, you know, you're talking about they play what, Villanova. That's a obviously a terrible matchup for him. Providence, that was a weird game, man. Like, he didn't score the second half. He missed free throws. Like, I'm chalking that one up just to the Duncan Center being, like, just out of control that day, like, needing the win. But, I think he's going to have a stretch where he puts up 25 a game for four in a row, and it's just, when does that happen? Probably happens starting with St. John's, just because St. John's is terrible, but I'm not worried about the slumps. Like, to me, it's just who Trevon Blewett is.
Yeah, he's one of these guys that kind of gets in his head a little bit. And I asked Chris Mack about it afterwards, and he kind of, after the game on Wednesday, and he kind of referenced that as well. He said we need to get our swagger back and things of that nature. So I don't know. I think he'll be fine. The thing with Trevon is that he's one of these guys where, like, when he doesn't see the first couple shots go in, he's probably going to end up having an off night. And I went back and I broke down the numbers. And if you want the specifics, it's up there on College Basketball Talk. But to summarize, he's much more efficient and much better when he sees his first couple shots go in, when he makes his first shot of the night, than he is when he misses his first shot of the night. And I think that he's just one of those guys where it's a little bit too much in between the ears. Actually, that's a direct quote from Mac. He said it's in between his ears. So I think he'll snap out of it and he'll get hot. The problem with him is he doesn't really do much if he's not making shots.
Right, right. You just hope he draws enough attention. You almost wish, like, him and JP McCura switched mindsets. Like, if Blewett had McCura's mindset of just everything's going in.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, you want JP with that mindset too. You just want.
Right, but I just.
Yeah, no, I know what you're
Blewett's
saying.
Blewett's just a better player, yeah.
Yeah, and the other problem with Xavier is that outside of JP and Trevon, they don't really have anybody that can carry him. So if those two guys are having an off night, and they tend to be a little bit streakier and a little bit more up and down than someone like a Jalen Brunson. Like, I don't think Jalen Brunson's had anything other than a very good game this year. Like, his bad games were like 17 points and 7 assists.
Right. Right.
And efficient too. Not like Trae Young's bad games, 29 and 5, but he has like 9 turnovers and shoots 8 for 22 from the floor. Like Jalen Brunson doesn't have nights like that. Trevon Blewett. No,
Brunson's bad game is playing like 28 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's so good.
Yeah, he's good. Really, really good. So I forget what we were talking about Creighton at Xavier. Yeah. What do you like there? The line, according to Ken Pom, is going to be Xavier minus two.
I like Xavier. You get back home. I know Creighton's like, I'm excited to watch Khyree Thomas on Blewett. Like, I assume Thomas is gonna match up with him at some point. When he's not on Blewett, I assume he's gonna be on McCura. Both of those are gonna be fun matchups to watch just because of Thomas's length and everything, but this should fit Xavier a little bit, right? Like, this game's going to be up and down. Like, both teams don't spend a lot of time like wasting time getting into the offense, getting the ball up and down the court. I think the fact that they get back to the Cintas Center, you come off two losses. I'm a firm believer in a bounce back game. And I'm not reading too much into the Villanova game just because it happens every time they play in Philadelphia. I almost think Mac should forfeit next year and just get an extra day of practice.
just don't even show up to the game.
Yeah, just pull like a Coach Taylor from Friday Night Lights and just like walk out and be like, sorry, we're done. Because we know we're going to lose by 23. But I like Xavier here, man. Like I think this is a game where Blewett comes back. I'll tell you what, like Karen Cantor, like he's been a pleasant surprise these last couple of games. I think this is a game though where you see somebody else step up besides those, whether it's Marshall, whether it's Gooden, even like a Tyreek Jones perhaps has a big game on the interior. Just because Creighton can get beat inside the
their paint. Bigs are skilled. Their bigs really aren't tough and physical, and like that's what right. Tyreek Jones is. I do think my thing with Karim Cantor is he's exactly what his brother is, man. His brother's Enes Kanter.
Yeah.
Like he is so skilled offensively. I love watching him in the post. I love watching him play. Like he's a lefty
that's
got great footwork, great touch, great moves in the post. Like he's just like a throwback, man. He's so much fun to watch, but he's a complete nothing on the defensive end of the floor. So like if he's not going to be guarding anybody, he's not good enough where you leave him on the floor regardless of the fact that he's not getting any stops.
Just run that 1-3-1 zone though. Like just when he's on the floor, you just have to run that 1-3-1 zone.
The lineup that Xavier used that was really interesting last night was Cantor at the five with Gooden.
Blewett at the four.
Yeah, Blewett at the four with Gooden, Scruggs, and Marshall out there. And they played McCura in that lineup a little bit, but McCura was, I don't know, he wasn't himself last night either. So
yeah, I love the lineup. Like I've been saying it for a while. I love the lineup with Cantor at the five. Like I think they could go Cantor, Gates, Blewett, McCura, and Marshall, or McCura and Gooden. You know, pick your choice between the two, Gooden and Marshall. Preferably Marshall, just because he's a better shooter, and you can run five out at that point.
Yeah, but you just don't get any stops, and that's a problem. But I'm
right, but it's pick your poison.
Yeah, I got you. I'm with you though. I like if it's Xavier minus two. I like Xavier minus two there. Let's move on. We have Miami at Clemson. Clemson's actually, as we're recording this, Clemson is in a dogfight with NC State. They're actually down 50-48 at NC State with about 14 minutes left in that game. So. It's going to be interesting to see how that one actually plays out. But assuming that Clemson gets that win, who do you like there? It's Clemson minus five per KenPom.
Yeah, I like Miami. I'm still buying into them. I was pretty high on them in the preseason. I'm still buying into them. And it's one of those teams, I don't know why I am. I think I just trust Larinaga and the guards to kind of all figure it out. Clemson's been good, don't get me wrong. But like they're weird, the fact that like, their starting five all averages double digits, and then nobody else averages over like 4 points a game. So it's like, if Miami can sit defensively, Miami's a good defensive team. If they can take away, you know, a couple of these starters, can somebody from Clemson's bench step up? And 5 points seems like a lot for Miami, a team that I think is one of the, you know, three or four best teams in the ACC.
Yeah, they're so good defensively, and they play at a slow enough pace that I don't think that they're going to lose by more than five. And I'm with you, man. Like I think this is the kind of game where they make a little bit of a statement and make a little bit of a comeback. I think Bruce Brown, he's a guy I thought was going to end up being an All-American candidate, and he has not lived up to that hype. I think Lonnie Walker has been disappointing. I think Jaquan Newton's been disappointing. Chris Likes has actually been kind of a little bit of a surprise, and same with DeJuan Hewell. So I think this is a game where Miami kind of wakes up. Texas A&M at Tennessee. This has got to be a must-win for Texas A&M, right? They are getting five. Yeah, they're getting 5 points at Tennessee right now.
I'm taking Texas A&M just because they have a full roster now.
Is Dwayne Wilson back?
They had it. Oh, that's true. I forgot about Dwayne. There's so many freaking people that get injured or suspended on the team. I forget who's out and who's back. I forgot that Wilson is out. I don't know if he's back or not.
I don't think he's going to be back for this game.
even if he's not, I still trust. I'm still going to take A&M just because their bigs can bother Tennessee. Man, A&M has to win. Like, I can't believe A&M's 0-5.
Well, they're 0-4 now, but they'll be 0-5.
0-4, if they lose, 0-4, yeah. Right. Like, this is the best roster in the SEC.
When they're healthy, the problem is they're never healthy. Right. So I'm with you on Texas A&M. I think this is the one where they kind of make a little bit of a statement. And Tennessee,
it's almost a must win for Tennessee too, though.
Yeah, in the SEC, like every game is like this.
But they're 2-2 with a home loss already. You know what I mean?
It's you're right. You're right.
If they want to finish in the top four of the SEC and get that bye.
You got to protect your home court. You can't lose twice at home.
Right. Especially the way the SEC kind of seems to be going this year, where, you know, everyone's kind of beating everybody. So you just have to make sure you win those home games and steal a couple on the road.
Yeah, I think the part of the reason that I like Texas A&M in this is that Tennessee's, the way that they kind of play is they're going to try to out tough you and out physical you. And I don't think you're going to out tough and out physical Texas A&M this season. But let's move on. We're both on Texas A&M there, right?
Yeah.
All right, let's move on. We have Oregon at Arizona. Actually, Arizona is losing at home at the under 8 timeout against Oregon State as we speak. It's 39-38, and I'm watching it, and it's an absolutely miserable basketball game to watch.
I took Arizona minus 15 today.
That was probably not your best decision.
No. I've made dumb decisions, and this is just another one of them.
You might be able to chalk that one up as an L at this point. But let's say they end up winning. I think that they're probably going to end up pulling away. But Oregon at Arizona, it's Arizona minus 10. Are you getting back on that Arizona bandwagon?
I mean, both these teams are just ultimate letdown teams, I feel like. I thought Oregon was going to be a top 25 team this year.
I did too. I still think that they have the potential to kind of
figure it out, get
to that level, just because I just inherently trust Dana Altman to be able to find a way to get his players to play well. But I do think that it's probably getting close to too late for them to really be considered an NCAA tournament team. They didn't do enough in the non-conference, and there aren't enough good wins available in the Pac-12. They probably have to win. They have to get one of these two at Arizona State or at Arizona to like really have an actual chance to be an NCAA tournament team.
Right. I still want to take Arizona. Yeah, like this isn't a great matchup for them because Oregon can take, like, they're all just like 6'4" to 6'7" guys, and they can just take Arizona off the dribble. The question is, will they be able to hit enough threes? They're a decent 3-point shooting team. It's Arizona. McHale.
I would go Arizona just because I don't see them having this ugly of a night again. So right, I would probably take Arizona. Back. I also think that it'll be a little bit more than 10, what the line will be.
Even if – what if Oregon wins tonight?
If Oregon wins tonight – oh, yeah, it'll be – I don't know. I'm probably taking Arizona either way. I just feel like this is – like tomorrow night, assuming that they win tonight, I feel like tomorrow could be one of those games where they just – they actually show up and, you know, they're up by 25 points at the end of the first half.
Yeah, that's fair. I'll stick with Arizona.
They're also 3-for-17 from three tonight, and I know they're not a great 3-point shooting team, but they're usually better than this. So let me ask you this: so our buddy Sam Vecenie had an interesting story that went up today, where he was trying to figure out. We've ranted before on this podcast. I think you and I have with multiple other guests about the fact that Arizona plays DeAndre Ayton and Dušan Ristić together. And Sam went out and found out that it's actually like that's their most successful lineup. But I think my issue with it is not the work that Sam did. I mean, Sam, he's a very smart individual. And I think that what he did is actually correct. Like, I do believe that Arizona's probably at their best with Ristić and Ayton together. But to me, that is the problem because Sean Miller hasn't found a way to be able to get the rest of his supporting cast to be good enough where he can actually play DeAndre Ayton in the position that makes him be his best. So we don't need to touch on this too much, but I think that what Sam did and the numbers he found say a whole lot more
about Arizona's supporting cast than it does about how good Dusan Ristić is. And I do think Dusan Ristić is a good player.
Yeah, I agree. You know, that says a lot more about the Jackson Cartwrights, the Brandon Randolphs, the
Ira Lees, Pinder, all those people.
Right. Fill in the blank with really anybody besides, maybe even throw in like Raleigh Hawkins there or Trier there, but
Raleigh's been pretty good.
He's not great.
Yeah. He just kind of, he is what he is, you know, he's a good college basketball player that might go pro a year too early.
Right. Yeah. I like his game a lot, but I guess so fill in any name besides Alonzo Trier and Raleigh Hawkins. And that's kind of where the problem is.
Yeah. Let's move on. We have Michigan at Michigan State. Michigan is actually intriguing to me. I thought that they looked pretty good against Purdue the other night. I know that you hate Purdue, so you probably knocked them for losing by a point at home against the Boilermakers, who I believe you once called an NIT team last week.
I never called Purdue an NIT team.
I'm pretty sure it's a quote. I'll play it back. I'll go find it.
I publicly apologized to Purdue last week.
Did you? I publicly apologized to Virginia.
I publicly apologized to Purdue I publicly apologized to Purdue, Oklahoma, and Virginia for being too low on them, but I'm demanding apologies from Maryland, Oregon, and USC.
Yeah, it makes sense. Michigan State minus 10. Who you got?
Michigan State. They've struggled the last two games again. I'm just going with my bounce back thing. They're at home. I like this Michigan team a lot, too. They're getting better as the year goes on. They were kind of flying under the radar there until the Purdue game, it felt like, where they were just kind of racking up wins and doing what they shouldn't. They're really like if they didn't blow that 20-point lead against Ohio State, I think you're talking about them in a whole different light, especially the way that Ohio State's been playing now. But Michigan State at home after the loss to Ohio State, the scare to Rutgers that honestly they probably should have lost at the stretch there. Like, they got bailed out that Rutgers just decided to foul with 8 seconds to go.
And Corey Sanders got his cramp at the worst point in overtime.
Right, right. So it just feels like Michigan State's going to come out and make a statement.
Yeah, I guess I'm with you there. Purdue at Minnesota, Purdue -8. What do you like?
Purdue. Minnesota stinks, and I'll be honest, I'm openly cheering against them.
I honestly don't think that line's going to end up being -8. I would not be surprised if it got as high as like -12. 18.
Throw one in front of there, and I'll still probably take Purdue.
Yeah.
Because they have the ability to shut down Murphy. And then if you shut down Murphy, where does Minnesota go?
I kind of feel like Minnesota is packing this thing up.
Yep. I think there's four. It's a four-bid league, and Minnesota's not one of the four.
Yeah, if they figure it out, but there's too many distractions going on. They already had issues before the distractions are going on. Reggie Lynch should probably be in a jail cell somewhere.
Yep.
So I talked a little bit about that last week. We probably don't need to go into it anymore, but that's all we got, man. Is there anything else that you're really looking forward to this weekend?
Not really, man. We talked about it off air. It's going to be a pretty loaded slate early on Saturday, so it'll be nice just being able to watch games.
It's actually set up perfectly if you are a NFL gambler, an NFL DFS player, which I am, because we have five ranked teams playing in, I don't want to say losable games, but in games where I wouldn't call them a lock to win at noon. We have TCU Oklahoma at 1. We have West Virginia Texas Tech at 2. We have Creighton Xavier at 2. We have Oregon Arizona at 2. And then at 3 o'clock, we get the Miami Clemson tip. And beyond that, we get North Carolina, Notre Dame, but with Colson out, that doesn't seem all that intriguing. Texas A&M, Tennessee is at 6. But beyond that, all the good stuff happens before 5. So you can kind of settle in and get a nice little sweat, get a nice little tilt going with the NFL games later on.
Yeah, for sure. It's going to be it's a perfect Saturday.
Riggs, my man, I appreciate you coming on. We went way longer than I meant to. Producer Tess is not going to be happy. She yelled at me last week about how long the podcast was. She's probably going to end up yelling at me again. It is what it is. When you take this job, you just kind of have to accept the fact that you're going to be yelled at by your producer every once in a while.
Leave reviews then. Help balance it out.
Yeah, leave reviews here. Leave a nice rating. Say nice things. Ask Tess to get off my back. And when you're done doing that, go find the Fundamentally Sound podcast. It's with Reeds. It's with Ben Brust, who used to play at Wisconsin, who I once saw really drunk at a game for the NCAA tournament. Should I tell that story on this podcast? I told it on your podcast, right?
I think you told it on mine, yeah.
So it was actually great. It was Wisconsin, North Carolina, the Sweet 16 game, in Philadelphia in 2016, the year that it was like the year where Yogi Ferrell was in that region. Maybe it was Wisconsin, Indiana. I don't remember who they were playing. But no, it was Wisconsin, Notre Dame. That's what it was. And Notre Dame ended up winning. But sitting right behind me, the way that it was set up was there was the court, and then there was the media section, and then there was like the front row of stands. And directly behind me, there was some guy just like screaming, "Bronson, Bronson, let me get a shot. Bronson, let me get a shot. Bronson, Bronson." And I was like, am I going to listen to this the whole damn game? And Bronson kind of turns and looks and gets a smile on his face and throws the ball to the crowd, like right over my head. I'm like, whoa. And I turn around and it's freaking Ben Bruss there with Josh Gasser. And Ben Bruss fires up a shot from the front row of the stands. And like, I want to say he hit the side of the shot clock. Like it wasn't even close.
That sounds about right.
But he was he did not get quieter as the game went along.
It's also about right.
So it was loud. It was entertaining. They ended up losing, and that's the end of my story.
Sounds good.
Yeah, great story, right? I think that's all I got for you, man. I'm going to let you get out of here so you can go watch the end of these games.
Sounds good. We'll talk to you next week.
See you later, man.